In the summertime, when the weather is high, you can stretch right up and touch the sky. When the weather's fine, you got women on your mind.
Cairo Knights, how you guys doing? Mungo Jerry encouraging you to do just awful things. It's, you know what, we talk about Eminem and like shock rock and all that stuff. Pay attention. Pay attention to the lyrics of this song. They are not encouraging our children to do wholesome things.
All right, let's read some of these lyrics. What are they doing? What's he telling?
You want me to break it down?
Break it down for us, Jonathan.
You just played the line. Have a drink, have a drive, go out and see what you can find.
Yikes.
Excuse me? Drunk driving? That's fine. Yeah. In Mungo Jerry's world.
I mean, look at those chops on his face.
I mean, we're upset about a song like WAP. At least it didn't encourage drinking and driving. That's all I'm saying.
True.
And then there's a line earlier, if her daddy's rich, take her out for a meal. If her daddy's poor, just do what you feel. It's disgusting. It's picking on an underprivileged person and exploiting their lack of wealth characteristics to your advantage.
But it's a bop.
It is a bop. It is a great song. I love that song. Anyway, before we get into a segment that's just filled with vitriol and hatred towards several people, I want to say I was very sad to hear about the passing of Jim Brown today. Obviously, I'm 41. I was never old enough to actually watch him play. He played from 1957 to 1968. How long did he play? Jeez Louise, he did not play long. He retired early, which is his right. 57 to 65. I knew I was right on that. And was an amazing athlete, one of the first athletes in football, at least, to break through the color barrier. Then retired after he won the MVP to go be in movies. And my first experience with seeing Jim Brown in anything was the movie Mars Attacks, which was, much like Jim Brown, an underrated masterpiece of a film. He was fantastic in it, and he will be missed. He also, of course, we shouldn't move off of talking about him without mentioning his social activism. You know, he used his platform as a famous athlete to advocate for civil rights. He worked towards fighting gang violence in Los Angeles and helped the underprivileged with his Amer I Can program. He was a great man. And the world is worse off without him in it. All right, now moving on to three stories about people that I'm just like, why is this world like this? First story is in Rhode Island, where police in Rhode Island released body camera footage that shows the arrest of a Cranston City Council member who authorities said was passed out behind the wheel of a car, Mungo Jerry style, while holding a glass pipe. Here is the audio of the police officer confronting the man.
Well, arrest is going to come check you out, man. I can't let you go. You were literally choking in your sleep. Somebody flagged me down about it.
Oh, I have sleep apnea. I'm sorry.
Well, and then you have a crack pipe in your hands, so it's like,
sorry.
Listen, I have a body camera. Obviously, yeah, everything I have is recorded. You know that. And
yeah, so look, I'm not going to sit here and make fun of somebody's addiction, but I do. One of the things when you watched like a show like Cops was you have to kind of scoff a little bit at the people who just bald face lie just on the maybe 1 out of 1,000 chance that the cops not going to search them, isn't going to find out the truth eventually. They're going to toss his car. So he said he didn't have any other drugs in the car, even though he had a crack pipe on him, this city councilman. He not only had that, he had a bunch of other drugs in the car. He had fentanyl, et cetera, et cetera. He has resigned from the Cranston City Council and stepped down. Now, here's a little bit of a thought exercise that I had about this guy. I'm not making excuses for him, but I'm just curious. What if it wasn't a crack pipe? What if it was a beer can? What if it was alcohol? Would we look at him differently?
Mungo Jerry wouldn't
be. Mungo Jerry wouldn't. He would just be like, look, I was listening to the classic hits, the Rhode Island Big 103.3. They were playing Mungo Jerry. That's my Rhode Island accent. And they told me have a drink and have a drive. Am I supposed to tell Mungo Jerry no? Well, I'm not going to do that. But no, if he'd been drinking behind the wheel of a car, it would be a DUI. But I've seen lots of people, including politicians, Matt Gaetz, who have gotten DUIs, and it didn't lead to them stepping down from anything. Now, you can argue, of course, that crack is worse than alcohol. And I would say, you know, alcohol is a lot easier to take in moderation than crack, obviously. But I'm just curious about that. I think people would think of it differently. And people might be a little more forgiving, even though both are inherently dangerous. But what I think is interesting here is that the man is wearing a suit. Okay? And a tie. He's a city councilman. He's a pillar of the community. The mayor of the city says, I've known this guy since he was a kid. And when he has a problem, by the way, this has nothing to do with anything. I don't necessarily care what political party he's in, but he is a Republican, which I think furthers my point about this. We can't keep pretending that this is a problem that only affects the unhoused, the homeless, the people in the inner city. We just can't. This is a widespread problem. It wasn't, by the way, crack itself. It was crack laced with fentanyl that he was smoking. So it goes beyond that. A disturbing part of the video, and this is all just speculation on my part, so bear with me. But the cop says that he had a body camera on. The guy's like, oh, can't you let me off with just a warning? Can't you just let me go? And the cop's like, I got it all on my body camera, buddy. Which worries me a little bit because it makes me think the cop was like, I could have covered for you, but unfortunately, these damn body cameras. His reason, by the way, for why he was smoking crack is because he was going through a divorce. Which, again, I'm not mocking him. But, again, it shows just how there but for the grace of God go I, so many of us might be. We might be a layoff, or we might be a divorce, or somebody important to us in our life dying away from ending up like him. Next story on this, I started very low on the people that I'm pissed off at segment today. This is in King County, where an official went into, according to Como News, a fit of rage during a recent board meeting and defended a convicted pedophile's nomination for a board seat. She's refusing to resign despite the program's chief officer telling her, you need to resign. Please, I'm begging you to resign. This was at a meeting of the King County Regional Homeless Authority Continuum of Care Advisory Committee. Now, I want to make something clear with this because a lot of people are like, oh, this kind of person is wielding power in Seattle. It's an advisory committee. These aren't people that have a lot of power. Their job is to give their opinions on topics of note, like, you know, housing. They don't really wield authority. They just advise. Well, this is the exchange that she had. Basically, somebody else on the board said, hey, there's this guy here and that we're talking about, and he is a rapist, and he makes me feel uncomfortable. He's, in fact, touched me. Here's that audio.
Code of ethics on this board, and Thomas Whitaker Raven Crowfoot is a sex offender, a repeat sex offender, and I have had bad experience with him.
So I gotta touch you up because we can't disclose people's personal business here, right?
Okay.
And although that's public disclosure, like, we have no right to out anybody in this space.
Okay. I thought thinking
right,
of what
like that's just not here. Okay at all.
Okay.
And I won't
and
stand
I
for that as a co-chair.
By the woman, the very aggressive, loud woman is Shanae Colston. That's her name. Shanae Colston. And it gets louder.
I will not have that here. If anyone wants to talk like that, you will be muted and even removed from this meeting. Board member or public or not. I don't care if they're a sex offender. I don't care if they're black. I don't care if they're indigenous. I don't care if they're a criminal.
Okay, Shanae, we got you.
No, it's not okay. That's the point.
So after that outburst, she was asked to please step down because you were sitting there screaming about how a rapist and a pedophile deserves housing and being very aggressive during the meeting for no reason, really. In fact, this woman, I mean, this is the exchange you just heard. Boiled down. A woman goes, hey, this guy has sexually harassed me. He touched me. Also, I don't know if you guys know this, but he's a pedophile. He raped a 15-year-old and also apparently was harboring a 13. She didn't even get to finish that. She wanted to tell everybody that. And then Shanae Colson bursts in with a, I don't care who he rapes. He deserves to be treated with dignity. Now, I don't usually think of dignity as a zero-sum game. But sometimes it is, and it definitely is here, where one person is being given dignity and another person who's been violated by that person, according to her, allegedly, is being shouted down. This isn't a case where a guy can't get housing because he lost his job or got laid off or budget cuts or whatever. He's having trouble getting housing because he's a pedophile. He raped a 15-year-old girl and was, according to police, harboring a minor who was 13 that he was also having sex with. There's nothing inherent about him that is precluding him from getting housing. His choices are the reason he can't get housing. And if you've listened to the show, with me hosting it anyway, you know I'm pretty liberal. I'm fairly progressive. But I have my limits. Not everyone deserves housing. They deserve the chance to get housing. They deserve a good job that will help them pay for housing. But I honestly don't give a crap if a pedophile is out on the street getting rained on. It's kind of funny how this is, by the way, the opposite of the argument we were having yesterday with the halfway house for pedophiles, where they're like, hey, we want these pedophiles to not be in houses around us. And then this woman's screaming how they need to be in houses. We live in a fun city. We live in a fun city. Finally, the last story I want to talk about of people that just piss me off involves our favorite senator from Texas, Raphael Ted Theodore Cruz. Ted Cruz is launching a Senate probe into Bud Light's ad with Dylan Mulvaney. So he this week opened an investigation into his allegations that Anheuser-Busch is marketing Bud Light to underage consumers in its ad that features a transgender activist and influencer, Dylan Mulvaney. This is from the Huffington Post story on it. In a letter to Anheuser-Busch CEO Brendan Whitworth, Cruz said, and by the way, Senator Marsha Blackburn is also in on this, also asked the beer industry trade group Beer Institute, which Whitworth chairs, to conduct its own investigation, or the company could say it's sorry for any infraction and publicly disassociate from Mulvaney to avoid further inquiry. Senators wrote, making their actions appear more like a publicity stunt. Look, when I see stuff like this, I genuinely wonder what Ted Cruz thinks his job is and what Marsha Blackburn thinks her job is. And any state senator or federal senator or whatever, congressman, anybody who's supposed to be serving the American people, I genuinely wonder what they think their job is. This is like if you worked at Pizza Hut and you said, hey, you know what? I know I'm supposed to be making pizzas, but I'm going to be in the back playing with Legos. Well, why? Legos are important too. Not as important as making pizzas. This is no benefit to anybody. He's launching an investigation into a company that hurt his feelings by associating with somebody that he probably doesn't even actually have an opinion on, but he knows that his constituents hate. That's what it is. I honestly don't think Ted Cruz cares about Dylan Mulvaney or Bud Light. He just wants his name out there so people like me will talk about it. I don't understand what he's trying to do here. But let's try to break it down. Ted Cruz is saying Bud Light, which cannot legally be sold to people under the age of 21, is marketing their beer to underage people by having a trans person who, by the way, Dylan Mulvaney is 26 years old, in very limited ads for their beer. I don't exactly know how this targets children or minors, unless Ted Cruz is literally trying to say that children love trans influencers like Dylan Mulvaney, which I think kind of hurts his point a little bit, doesn't it? That children are just naturally drawn to somebody like that? This isn't Bud Light using a clown to sell beer. This isn't Bud Light using some children's cartoon character.
JoJo Siwa.
Thank you.
Can you imagine?
JoJo Siwa. It's not Bud Light going, hey, Minecraft is great. Can we start putting little Minecraft Bud Light Easter eggs in Minecraft? Could we start doing that? Can we work with them?
Product placement.
Yeah. I don't understand what it is he's trying to accomplish here, other than just wasting time and not doing the job that he was sent to Washington to do. Because this ain't it, Ted. And let me ask you, those of you that are outraged by this ad, this Bud Light, Dylan Mulvaney thing, let me ask you this, and I seriously mean this. Did you even see the ad? Have you actually ever seen the ad? And almost as importantly, if you have seen the ad, did you see it before the controversy? Or did you only see it after people like Kid Rock or Ted Cruz or any other right winger went apoplectic about it? Because I got to be honest with you, I don't think I've seen the ad once. I'll be even more honest with you. I had no idea who Dylan Mulvaney was before this. So while Ted Cruz is winning this battle by getting idiots like me to talk about him on air, Bud Light's also winning the battle with free advertising by having people like Ted Cruz attack them. Because most people in this country either don't care about this issue and are still going to buy Bud Light. And by the way, their sales are fine, despite what you've heard. Most people either don't care about it, or most people who are progressive, who are liberal, are going to now go out and buy Bud Light just to stick it to Ted Cruz. Anyway, we're moving on. That's as serious as I want to get on Friday. Coming up, we got Kevin. He's going to do some music news for us. For instance, we got some music news about Ringo Starr. He's still alive, right, Kevin?
Yeah, man.
Oh, see, that was a terrible tease. You should have said, stick around, you'll find out.
Stick around, you'll find out.
Next on Cairo Nights. I'm all over the place. Clowns to the... Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you. Yeah, that's what you get for putting a 90% tax rate on anything over $10 million. You jerks.
This album is so good. Revolver?
Oh, Revolver's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's the first Beatles record I really, like, got into as, like, a you know, I mean, I heard the Beatles as a kid, you know, of course, you hear all the popular songs, but the one I really appreciated was Revolver, as someone who, can actually get into music.
Right. I'm the same way, and I think we should have this debate, because we're going to talk about the Beatles here, so I'll save it for later. I have a Beatles take that I think I want to get to, but first, it's Kevin's music news corner. is what we're calling this. I've officially entitled it that here on Cairo Nights.
Branding.
Sure. Branding. And Kevin, what is a story that you would like to talk about in the news right now?
So the drummer for the band you just heard, the Beatles, Ringo Starr, the one of the stars himself of Shiny Time, or wait, what was that show called?
Station? Shiny Time Station.
Yeah. That show. So
Thomas the Tank Engine.
I already flubbed it. So he said that he is not going to write a memoir, and he has been, you know, offered millions of dollars multiple times over his career and over his life, but they want to focus only on the small amount of his life that focused on the Beatles. And he said he has so much to write about, and that he could write three books before it even got to the Beatles. So he doesn't want to, you know, wax nostalgically only about the Beatles. He's not afraid to talk about that, but he doesn't want to just go into detail about that one specific time period. I think that's kind of a healthy way to look at it, and not just like lionize these few years of his life. It was obviously the bulk of popularity that got him to where he is today and that people know him from. But I think that's a kind of a down to earth and realistic way of looking at it. But that's the biggest thing.
That's what people want to care about. That's the only thing people care about. That's the only thing people care about. Here's the thing. Ringo saying that is sweet and admirable, and he's like, I've lived a whole life. It wasn't just the, 10 years that I was in the Beatles, or however long he was in the Beatles. I had a whole life before and after that, and it's been amazing, blah, 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 blah. That to me is like, you remember the Bohemian Rhapsody movie, the Queen movie from like 5 years ago?
Yeah. Great movie.
Did you know that Queen actually wanted to make that not about Freddie Mercury specifically? Brian May thought this would be a great movie. We'll have Freddie die halfway through the movie, and then the rest of the movie will be about how we picked up the pieces after he died and still were an amazing band that sold out stadiums and had hit records and everything after he died. And it's like, Brian, I love you, and you're incredibly talented. Nobody knows any Queen songs after Freddie died.
Yeah.
Not one single person, not even the most diehard, no pun intended, Queen fan can name one of those songs. And with Ringo, it's the same thing. Like, Ringo, I'm sure you have a lot of great stories about going in and recording It Don't Come Easy, but nobody cares. Nobody cares about that. They just want to hear about your time in the Beatles, which is tragic, really, because I think the Beatles have to be not only the most documented band of all time, but probably the foremost documented human beings of all time. There are books upon books upon books and movies and videos and everything about the Beatles. And I get what Ringo's saying. He's like, do we really need another Beatles book? Probably not. Yet I'm not buying your book about, putting together your all-star band with Jack Bruce and a bunch of other rhythm section players from 60s bands.
So, Jonathan, my question for you, if you were to ask or get the wish to have one rock star musician throughout history, you know, dead or alive, to write a memoir, whose would you want to read?
A memoir that I'd want to read. By any rock star. Gigi Allen.
Wow. And it would be written by him?
Yeah, it wouldn't be written in ink either.
In feces?
Okay, all right. I was hoping that you would get that, but I was hoping you wouldn't get it that much. Bowie. Does Bowie have a memoir?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Let me look it up. I don't want to read. Bowie's the only one. Honestly, I wouldn't want to read an autobiography by a lot of people because they omit stuff. I want somebody to follow him around and get the bare bones details. Like, we've discussed this many times. I love Nirvana. Michael Azarod wrote the best, in my opinion, the best rock and roll biography of all time called Come As You Are, about the rise of Nirvana and, of course, then Kurt's death. And it's so much better than... Years later, I love my sister, but she bought me Kurt's diary. And I not only had no interest in reading it because it felt like it was a violation, but I also had no interest in reading it because it's like, I don't know how truthful this is going to be. You need a third person for this. So I'll throw the question back at you. Who would whose memoir would you want to read?
I think that it would be really cool to read. let me see here. Who would it be cool to read? Chuck Schuldiner. He was a band. He was a creator of the band called Death, and they were one of the like progenitors of this death metal genre. I'll give him the name, but Chuck Schuldiner. He was a really smart guy, and he was kind of leaning more toward like prog rock toward the end of his career. He died of brain cancer in like 2000, I think, or 99. But I would have loved to read a book from Chuck Schuldiner. Because he was also, like, very famously not an easy guy to get along with. He basically didn't have the same band for an album. He would, like, go through members like clockwork. So I'd like to hear his take on that.
I'd also like to read anything by Rocky Erickson, who was the lead singer for the 13th
Floor
Elevators.
He's a wacky one.
Invented. Yeah, but he's it's I shouldn't say crazy because he's got severe issues. But he basically invented psychedelic rock back in the 60s. Okay, now back to my Beatles take. And it's this. What is the best Beatles album of all time?
Are you asking me or are you asking the texters?
You, yes.
Or, oh, you're asking me?
Fine. Texters, 888-973-CAIRO, 888-973-5476. What is, in your opinion, Kevin, the best Beatles album of all time?
I'm going to go with Revolver. What about you?
I would actually also say Revolver. And the reason I have for that is, one, I love Abbey Road. I love the White Album. Even Let It Be Naked. It was awesome as well. But Revolver was the first album for me. Rubber Soul's great, but Revolver was the first album that they did where it was like, nobody else could do this. Nobody else. Like, Rubber Soul is great, but they weren't doing anything crazy yet. Revolver has, you know, Tomorrow Never Knows on it. It's got Taxman. It's when they like started messing around with sitars and playing things backwards. You know, the Paperback Writer was written in that period, and the B-side for Paperback Writer is Rain, which literally has a backwards guitar solo on it. And it's the where they were really coming into their own was during Revolver. And I love Sgt. Pepper's, but sometimes there's a little bit of excess there, you know? There's a little bit like where they went just a little bit too far. And I got to be honest with you.
Your Spinal Tap moment.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'll just say this. George's song on Sgt. Pepper, not great. It's not great. Within You, Without You, not great. It's a bad song. And there's not one bad song on Revolver. Of course, this song's off of Rubber Soul, which is also awesome.
Yeah.
I saw an interview earlier today with Paul McCartney where he talked about how he wrote Blackbird. He said it was based on a piece of Brahms, the, you know, musician and composer Brahms. It was like some piece that he'd heard by Brahms, and he figured it out on guitar. And then I couldn't finish the video because I was so pissed off. Paul was like, and I looked this part, it went like this, and I was like, oh, that's wonderful. I'm going to turn that into an entire song. Son of a... Too talented. It's Cairo Nights. I hate. Can you hold on? Can you leave this up? I just want to hear this one line because it makes me cringe every time.
I am an antichrist. I am an anarchist.
Oh, I hate it so much. I hate it so much.
You're not an anarchist?
It's the most forced rhyme in the history of music. And it's funny when you think about it, because he's saying, by the way, hi, it's Cairo Nights. My name's Jonathan Weir. We've got Kevin with me. It's funny when you think about it, because he's like, I'm an anarchist, right? I'm crazy. I'm all over the place. I don't follow the rules, except for, obviously, the rules of rhyming and meter. I have to force this rhyme into this. Otherwise, it doesn't flow properly for me. I hate it so much. And I love the Sex Pistols. I really do. I love the Sex Pistols, but God. Hey, that was, speaking of rock biopics and everything, did you see that series last year on Hulu, Pistol?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
Oh, it's real good. It's more from the guitar player Glenn's point of view than it is from Johnny Rotten's, but it's really good. Well, it's really good up to a point, that, and there's a shocking sexual assault in it, but other than that, it's good. It's really good. It's really well done. It is good. All right, what the hell? You know, it's Friday. I'm just going to keep this line of thought going. What is, because you brought this up, that Ringo is not going to release a memoir. You asked me what is an autobiography that I'd like to read by a rock star. What is the best rock biopic?
The Dirt? By Motley Crue?
The Motley Crue.
I mean, I don't know about how much of it is really true, but...
Yeah.
Cash by Johnny Cash as
Cash by Johnny Cash is great.
High Fidelity style.
Yeah. But, like, as far as movies are concerned, actually,
biopic, sorry about that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question. That Ray
was
amazing.
Walk the Line's up there, right?
Yeah, Walk the Line. Ray.
See, I didn't like, I got to tell you, I didn't like Ray, and there are parts of Walk the Line that I didn't like.
Straight Outta Compton was awesome.
I have not, believe it or not, I have not watched that, despite the fact that I love NWA.
What does that stand for?
I'm okay with it. I believe it stands for not with that attitude, mister.
Okay.
I think
just
that's
checking.
What it stands for. is Bohemian Rhapsody up there?
I think so, yeah. Rocket Man.
I'll be honest with you. My favorite is Rocket Man.
Doors?
The Doors is great. Yeah. Yeah, Van Morrison is Jim Morrison. I mean, the only reason he got the role was because of, you know, the last name thing. Obviously, he's Jim Morrison's son, so that's why he got it. Almost Famous is not a rock biopic, but it kind of... Well, it kind of is, because it's Cameron Crowe's life as a young reporter for Rolling Stone.
That movie was awesome.
I love that movie. Sid and Nancy, somebody said, that's okay.
It'll make you feel clean. Like, in comparison, you'll watch that and go, oh, I'm not as bad as I thought I was.
The Buddy Holly story with Gary Busey is pretty great.
La Bamba?
La Bamba! Okay, La Bamba's great. The best one is Dewey Cox. Is Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. Have you ever seen that one?
It's so good.
It's so great. It is. And what's funny about that, it was really only making fun of two movies. It was making fun of Ray and Walk the Line. But somehow, if you watch that movie, it predates so many of the movies that it was making fun of. Because it predates Bohemian Rhapsody. It predates every rock biopic that came after it. But they all follow the same pattern of like, oh, this is a really dark period. Oh, man, this is when he got into drugs. Reluctantly. This is when his wife left him, or this is where nobody loved him anymore. This is where the band broke up. Oh, this is where the band got back together. It's just over and over and over again.
Have you seen Romper Stomper?
No idea what you're talking about.
That's Russell Crowe's first movie. It's like about a like British Nazi skinhead group that are affiliated with punk rock and stuff, but it's one of Russell Crowe's first movies.
Well, that's probably why I haven't watched it, because I hate Russell. Oh, Russell Crowe. I thought, I don't know.
But it's not a biopic. It's just a music-related thing. I don't even know. But yeah, it's not a biopic specifically about any musician, but it is kind of interesting that out of everything, that was Russell Crowe's first big movie. It was about, you know, Nazi skinhead punk rock bands and stuff.
I was actually thinking of Russell Brand.
Wow.
Yeah. That's who I was thinking of. He did play a rock star and Get Him to the Greek.
True.
So, you know, and Forgetting Sarah Marshall, he played the same character. So that's it. Yeah, I said the Beatles are the most documented band of all time, and I stand by that. But there's never been like a Beatles movie. I'm sure it's just that nobody has enough money to do it. But that would be a worldwide event. If Netflix or Hulu or HBO Max or any of these big streamers went out and made not a movie, but a TV series that chronicled the lives of the Beatles. That would be fantastic.
Kind of like the Wu-Tang Hulu doc, Hulu show.
Yeah, that would be great. Yes, but if they went album by album, like Meet the Beatles to Abbey Road, that would be amazing. Probably never happened because nobody has that much
money. All right, fund it, Jonathan. Let's go.
Okay, you know what? You talked me into it. I'll fund it with the $20 I have left to my name.
Kickstarter.
Coming up, we got the Doom. We got the Doom Scroll. Your favorite drunk foods. What is everybody's favorite drunk food? Good topic for Friday night. That's next on Car Nights. More than this.